Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Miller Lite. Triple Hops Brewed Miller Lite. Taste greatness.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it, New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill.
Top of and you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast. Show number 413. I'm Amy Matheny, and I'm live in New York. It's Amy Matheny with Heather Schmucker.
New York City.
New York City.
Where we are.
We are. Exciting. We're in Times Square. Well, we're not.
I'm not
we're out
right now.
Right now. And it's
not this very moment.
And it's Heather's
Virgin podcast.
It's her Virgin podcast. We are busting her cherry right here in Times Square. Not really in Times Square,
not
but
really
in a hotel in Times Square is where we're busting.
Which is an appropriate place.
It's totally appropriate.
Sometimes it happens.
I really think now all my podcasts should just be in bed. When Mitchell and I do ours in bed, and
it's good. It's a very nice bed.
For those of you who don't know, Heather's my best friend. She's also my fake girlfriend, but we're now calling her my executive girlfriend. This trip.
It's a new term.
It's a totally
very
new term.
Excited by it.
And for those of you who just want an update, Mitchell is on his cruise ship and in Hawaii safely. And I know all of you feel like he sent some love this week with the 80 degree weather to all of us in Chicago. And I have yet to experience the 80 degree Chicago weather, but we will tomorrow.
We will tomorrow. We're going
by
back.
The time you listen to this podcast, we will have experienced a little weather. But we will have experienced a lot of weather. But as you all know, from mine and Mitchell's show, I had this awesome opportunity to come to New York to see Saturday Night Live.
Woo!
With your host, Helen Mirren. And let me tell you, the Mirren does not disappoint.
Does not disappoint.
Let me just say that the experience of going to a Saturday Night Live show, I did not realize how mint it was to get one of these tickets. It's harder to be Charlie in Willy Wonka to get
the golden ticket,
which they didn't let me keep once we got the ticket.
No, we had to give the tickets back. It was
I had to go to a little NBC page because they all look like the little NBC pages that you see on the 30 Rock. And they're a little...
sort of. Slightly dowdy.
Slightly dowdy, but
adorable at the same time.
Geeky.
Polyester fabulousness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
With their little
outfits.
Skirts and their little outfits.
The guys look sharper.
Adorable.
The girls look a little sad.
I don't think they look sad. It's just, it's a uniform.
It is, but the girls' uniform is somehow sad. And the boys' uniform is kind of like okay.
Yeah.
I don't
They're
know
They're adorable.
Why.
They're each and every one of them more adorable than the
yes,
next.
Yes, but they did not let me keep my purple ticket that said Saturday Night Live. And the date.
And Helen Mirren.
And Helen Mirren and Foo Fighters.
I don't know if we've mentioned Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren, yes. And I hope you guys watched it, and if you didn't, then you... I couldn't have sold it more before the episode. And in addition to watching it, If you haven't, you can go on the YouTube and watch it. But I have to say the experience of going to see Saturday Night Live was super, super, super cool. It's very late.
It's very late for those of us who don't stay up. Here in the New York City, they watch it at, it doesn't start till 11:35.
Yeah, 11:30.
Which we're used to, like, 10:30.
Yeah. It's late. It's late, and it's an hour and a half, and when you walk out, it's 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And then you don't know where you can go get your drink on and where you can go get your eat on.
But no, you wander around.
Yeah. And then you end up at a pizza place.
You do.
New York pizza.
Which is good.
Which is better than Chicago pizza, I say. And you all can hate, but just don't hate.
It's better.
Don't hate the truth. It's the truth.
It's the truth.
But the Helen Mirren.
Oh, my God.
Helen Mirren's titties. Let's just say Helen Mirren's titties. When they said that, that was the funniest thing ever.
Skit made for Amy Matheny.
There was a skit that they actually did make for me. And they told me. They told me that the whole thing was for me. I want to thank Alex for the tickets. I don't know if he'll listen to this, but I will definitely tell him that he should listen to show 413. Because Alex made this whole thing possible along with Mitchell. So they were the dynamic duo that got Heather and I to Saturday Night Live. And, Helen Mirren has never hosted. They had Sir Elton John, and then the following week they had Dame Helen Mirren. So a sir and then a dame, back to back. I don't think that's ever probably happened in the history of Saturday Night Live. And I thought she did a really good job. She was in absolutely every skit.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the skit about her tits was my favorite. But then her tits are just my favorite thing probably on earth.
She is a beautiful, beautiful...
Even possibly in the universe.
She's a beautiful, beautiful woman.
And there was one moment where she came out to introduce the Foo Fighters. Like, because we're watching it, right? And
so set the scene, because it's...
Well, set the scene, because you're like a stage manager, producer, theater person. So what does it feel like when you're sitting there watching?
It's so much smaller than I thought it was going to be. It's so much more intimate than I thought it was going to be. It
and you're up
like,
high.
And you're up high, because you feel like... So it's just a television studio. It's just a big studio, and there are seats on the floor, which... We were not sitting on the floor seats, which I think our seats were much, much better because we were in the... There's a sort of balcony area where you can watch. And we were in the... Thanks to Amy Matheny's fabulous machinations, we ended up in the middle of the balcony, right dead center in front of the monologue. And it's just so much smaller and more intimate, and there's so much going on. It's just madness.
Yeah.
Because they set these, it's whole sets that just come together and then
and you don't
break
roll
apart.
The sets into one space.
No.
It's like they've divided the studio up into like seven different areas in which they can film.
Yeah.
So where the band plays, that's always that. Where the opening monologue, where the Saturday Night Live band and the monologue happens, that happens. The only thing that happens in front of that is the opening sketch, the Barack Obama sketch, or the weekend update. They'll put flats, or we call them flats, but they're, wood boards, walls in front of that. But then they have these other little areas, so sometimes you can't see something being filmed, like we were watching it on television screens as well.
Right, for sure. Yeah. But it all, that opening segment all happened right in front of where Helen Mirren did the monologue, and while you were all and we were all on the video screen watching the opening credits after Live from New York at Saturday Night, suddenly the whole set just disappears, and it's you're watching, there's Helen Mirren.
Yeah. But the it's great amazing. Thing about being in there is there's no magic. It's not like a Broadway show.
It's all right out
it's
there.
It's like there's 20 crew people dressed in black, and you're seeing them, and they're waiting to tear this thing down. And Heather found her ideal job.
I have
job.
My new dream job, which I have identified solely by being in the audience at Saturday Night.
I think you
night,
can put it on Craigslist tomorrow.
I think, yes. It's a pretty limited, narrow field, I think. But I feel really super qualified. But there is a person whose job it is. I don't know what they call it, but I would call it the host wrangler.
Yeah.
And there was literally
it's a sexy title.
It's a stage manager probably on the stage management team. But it's the host wrangler, and there was literally a person who from the moment the show started to the moment the show ended.
Yep.
when they all got together on stage and hugged, whose job it was when Helen Mirren was done with the scene, who held out her hand, and Helen Mirren took the woman's hand, and she whisked Helen Mirren away to the next thing to do, and then brought her right back to the next place she had to be, and stood there while she did it, and as soon as she was done, it was the, like, you know, they were holding hands and running off into the sunset, and I want that to be my life.
That would be a great.
Helen Mirren's hand.
I want to hold her titties.
Helping her.
You can hold her
the
hands.
I just want to take her to the next place she needs to be. Make sure she has everything.
And there was this one moment during the show where she walked out to introduce the Foo Fighters, and the woman had on the most stunning black dress. Now, it was just a plain black dress.
It was a simple black dress. It was on Helen Mirren.
But on Helen Mirren, this dress took my breath away, and I don't know how much you guys got to see on the television show, so we have to go back and watch it on my TiVo, but she looked so stunning in this dress. It was unbelievable, and she was so game. She just had a lot of fun.
She did. She was wonderful.
And so I highly recommend having a Saturday Night Live experience if you can make that happen for yourself.
Absolutely.
And definitely, you know, I don't know that Helen will ever do it again, but if she does, you will see Heather wrangling her, and I will be holding her hand all the way. That's exactly right. And I did have a little moment. We were sitting at one point in a different seat, and we were sitting kind of on the end, and there was a glass room over my left shoulder, and it was kind of curtained off from the inside, and Heather tapped me on the shoulder, and this is before we moved into the seats we eventually sat in, but we were sitting there, and I look over my shoulder, because Heather was like, look in there, because I think they're all in there, and it was like the writer's room, and all of the writers and the actors and everybody were all crouched. I mean, they were sitting on the floor. I mean, they were just like on top of one another in this small office. Mm-hmm. And you could see the index cards on a whole like wall with who was coming up each week, like their whole monthly calendar. They were all sitting on the floor, and I kind of leaned and I looked in. I was like, oh my gosh, Heather, they're all in there. And then I looked in a little farther, like I leaned over a little farther, and I'm like looking in there, and I see Helen Mirren like sitting in the center on the floor. She's got like her little white like long sleeve t-shirt on, and she's sitting there with her new short hair kind of tucked behind her ears. And I like looked in there, and she saw me looking at her,
peeking through the window.
And I'm like the only one in the whole studio who could see this. I mean, I was probably the only out of 300 people, just like where I was sitting right there where the slit in this curtain was not closed. And I peek in there, and Helen Mirren catches me looking at her because I'm staring at her. And she looks up at me, and she kind of smiles and raises her eyebrows, and I kind of smiled back and raised my eyebrows, and then she kind of like opened her mouth in this big kind of like chuckle smile. So I had a moment with Helen Mirren.
You did.
And then we changed seats.
You two are besties now.
We're besties.
You're totally besties.
It's like, how is the woman that I fantasize about more than anybody, sorry Kelly, how have I never spoken real words to her? I mean, I've met her mm-hmm. once. Well, if you call that meeting her. I have yet to post the video. But I have like 10 seconds where you can see that I'm standing over her left shoulder. And and I was like speechless. I'm like, I don't know. It's good. It's good for Amy to have somebody that I'm speechless around.
I think it's
around.
Good to have a goal.
It's
it helps you keep the
Yours
goal.
Is Wrangler, and mine is just
Yours
to speak
is
to
just
the woman.
To speak to her, and I feel like you want to live with that potential in your life, and once it happens, like who knows how it's going to go, too. You know, you never know. It's always going to be just this moment that you just could have.
But I have a little smile. I have
you
this.
You do. You've gotten much further than you were before you went. Much
it's
further.
It's kind of great. It's kind of great. It's
it
true
is.
Indeed.
It was so lovely.
This is the thing I want to tell people. We were standing in line. You're standing in line at 30 Rock for like a really, you know, there's all these different
lines.
Well,
there's a different, yeah. We
there's
were
different
in the,
categories yeah. it's, of it's where wild. You can stand. And we're standing in this line, and we had gotten moved, and we got moved to another place, and we're standing in this line finally, and there was this couple, they're kind of like a hipster New York couple behind us, and we're talking, and I overhear this woman say something about, you know, well, you know, it's not like there's any uber Helen Mirren fan. There's no uber Helen Mirren fan. And I think she was talking about, like, you know, that there are some times when there's somebody like Jennifer Lopez or Bono.
Huge.
I don't know, some pop culture who they think celebrity. Is a huge global star, right? Which I think Helen Mirren is, but come on. But, you know, a Jennifer Aniston or Julia Roberts or whomever all these people are. You know, and I think the woman was trying to say, because she's like, you know, I'm an uber Foo Fighters fan, but, you know, there's not really any uber Helen Mirren fans who are, like, knocking down doors to come here and, like, see Helen Mirren. And, of course, I'm standing right in front of her. And I just said, I just turned around literally without saying excuse me. I didn't even say excuse me. I just said, I'm an uber Helen Mirren fan. I flew here precisely to see Helen Mirren, you know, host Saturday Night Live. And she was very funny. Yes,
it's just important to educate the children about...
Well, she was our age, I believe.
No, she was. She was very... She was awesome.
She was a writer for Jimmy Fallon's show.
She was.
And knew a guy I went to college with.
Yeah.
So...
Yes, you are an uber.
But I was like, I'm an uber. Like, I'm an executive Helen Mirren
that's
fan.
How the executive... Yes.
I'm not a weirdo executive Helen Mirren fan. I'm an executive
Helen Mirren fan.
Helen Mirren fan. So, what can we say? It was tits
it was
all
amazing.
Around. It was tits
and
all around.
And do it. I mean, if you ever get a chance to go to Saturday Night Live, it is just really, it was an amazing, fun, super experience. And you just, as soon as, we kept saying... Amy kept saying the whole time that it wasn't until the moment where we would hear the voice.
It's Saturday night.
You know? And it's true. You're sort of having this experience. You're in these lines, and then you're sitting in the studio, and... Like,
we were sitting in the studio, though, and I went, I won't feel like it's real. And the band's playing.
And
I'm like, I don't feel
song.
Like it's going to be real until the guy says it. And Heather, like, says, it feels pretty real to me.
Right now. They're counting down.
But it didn't feel real to me until literally, like, she came out and did the opening monologue.
And then or suddenly you're just
going. Actually, the White House.
Yeah.
That was when it felt real.
And you,
and then the guy speaking. It's crazy.
Awesome.
Something I can etch off my bucket list.
I know, bucket list.
Done. So we got to tell you what else is going on in the news. There's more news than Heather and I going to see Helen Mirren at Saturday Night Live.
Is there really?
There's a little more. So we're going to tell you what's going on in the news and in the theater and entertainment. And then Heather and I are going to be back with the Best of Broadway all coming to you on this very special New York Windy City Queercast.
Want to learn to play tennis in no time? Chicago's Midtown Tennis Club has the country's only patented tennis teaching program to turn beginners into players in just 3 short weeks, with sessions beginning April 30th. During Tennis in No Time, students will learn the basics of the game, including the forehand, backhand, and serve in a fun group atmosphere. Best of all, Tennis in No Time is affordable, even in today's economic climate. Enrollment in TNT is $115 and includes a 3-week membership to Midtown Tennis Club, invitations to 2 social parties, and 9 hours of instruction from the country's best pros for only $115. That's less than $20 for each hour and a half lesson. Midtown Tennis Club is located in the heart of Chicago's Lincoln Park at 2020 West Fullerton Avenue. For more on Tennis in No Time, call 773-235-2300 or visit midtown.com/Chicago.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
The Delaware legislature has voted to approve the Delaware Civil Unions and Equality Act of 2011. The state's House of Representatives voted 26-15 in favor of the measure on April 14th, a week after the Senate passed it. Governor Jack Markell intends to sign the bill, which State Senator David Sekola and State Representative Melanie George sponsored.
Transgender woman Brittany Novotny has been elected president of the Young Democrats of Oklahoma. Novotny, who once challenged anti-gay Oklahoma politician Sally Kern and won almost 35% of the vote in an unsuccessful bid to unseat her, is the first transgender person elected to head a Young Democrats organization.
The U.S. Navy will not discharge Petty Officer Second Class Stephen Jones, a sailor who fell asleep in the same bed as a colleague. Jones, stationed in Charleston, South Carolina, fell asleep in the same bed as Petty Officer Brian McGee after the two watched television. Jones's roommate found them together. Both were clothed and had not engaged in any sexual conduct.
In Maryland, the state Senate has sent the Gender Identity Anti-Discrimination Act back to committee, in effect killing it. Senators voted 27 to 20 to recommit the bill to the Judicial Proceedings Committee, which had advanced the measure by a 7 to 4 vote. The measure had previously passed through the House of Delegates by an 86 to 52 vote.
In Florida, Miami Shores Village Council candidate Jesse Walters, who's openly gay, filed a police report after campaign signs were defaced with anti-gay slurs. Walters said that flyers depicting him, his partner of 23 years, and their 15-month-old daughter must have angered someone. Walters won the election, unseating an incumbent.
In New Jersey, transgender employee LJ DeVoro has filed a lawsuit against the drug treatment center that fired him. The center questioned DeVoro, 39, about his gender almost immediately after he started his position, which involved overseeing urine tests administered to men. The case challenges an employee's right to terminate transgender candidates for positions that the law says may be gender-specific, and this type of case is believed to be a first in the state.
President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama will tape a show with Oprah Winfrey April 27th in Chicago. The Obama's appearance will air May 2nd, approximately 3 weeks before Winfrey's show ends on May 25th. Winfrey endorsed Obama for president in 2008, her first public backing of a candidate.
The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has reversed two prior court rulings and denied an accurate birth certificate to a Louisiana-born five-year-old boy who was adopted at birth by Orrin Adar and Mickey Smith, a gay couple in New York. Adar and Smith adopted their Louisiana-born son in 2006 in New York, where a judge issued an adoption decree. When the couple attempted to get a new birth certificate for the child, the Louisiana Registrar's Office rejected their request. In separate hearings, U.S. District Judge Jay Zaney and a three-judge appellate panel ruled in favor of the couple before the latest decision.
Equality Hawaii and the Human Rights Campaign are praising the Hawaii Senate for passing a bill codifying prohibitions against discrimination in employment on the basis of gender identity by a 22-2 vote. The bill moves to Governor Neil Abercrombie for his signature.
In New Jersey, transgender Norristown woman Asia Santana has pled guilty to fatally stabbing boyfriend Eric Nevitt during an argument last August. Santana, who is 40, admitted to one count of third-degree murder and one count of possessing an instrument of crime. Nevitt, 28, died of puncture wounds to his lung and thoracic aorta.
Tommy R. Bennett has filed a complaint with the City of Chicago Commission on Human Relations against the Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. and the minister's Chicago-based organization, the Rainbow Push Coalition, claiming harassment and termination on the basis of Bennett's sexual orientation. Among Bennett's claims are that one Push employee refused to work for him because Bennett is gay and that Jackson wanted Bennett to perform oral sex on him. Jackson's attorneys have denied all claims.
In world news, in Honduras, there are criticisms that police are ignoring the rise in attacks on journalists and gays. Since 2008, gunmen have attacked at least 10 journalists, 60 lawyers, 155 women, and 59 LGBT individuals. Experts say killings have risen because of a surge in narcotics trafficking, but the treatment regarding LGBTs has some comparing the Central American country to Uganda, the African nation that recently debated a proposed law that would make homosexuality subject to the death penalty in some instances.
In Uruguay, a same-sex marriage bill is expected to be proposed soon. The measure was drafted with the help of gay rights group Ovejas Negras, which is called Black Sheep. Last year, Argentina became the first country in the region to legalize same-sex marriage.
In England, Sir Simon Milton, who was chief of staff to London Mayor Boris Johnson, has died at the age of 49. Simon, one of two openly gay deputy mayors in the Conservative administration, died following a short illness.
Also in London, a gay couple was allegedly kicked out of a Soho pub for kissing. Jonathan Williams, age 26, said he and his date James were enjoying a quiet drink in the John Snow on Broadwick Street when a customer complained about them. Williams said that he and his date were forcibly removed from the establishment. Soho is considered the heart of London's gay scene.
In entertainment news, Dolly Parton, Colin Farrell, Sean Hayes, Chris Colfer, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, Melissa Etheridge, Joel McHale and Chaz Bono were among those joining GLAAD as it honored Kristen Chenoweth, NBC Entertainment Chairman Robert Greenblatt, and the Best in Television and Journalism at the 22nd Annual GLAAD Media Awards in Los Angeles. It was a tie in the Outstanding Comedy Series category, with both Fox's Glee and ABC's Modern Family taking home the award.
Singer Annie Lennox will receive the prestigious O2 Silver Clef Award July 1st in London. The Music Therapy Charity will award the singer for her music and humanitarian efforts. Previous winners include Paul McCartney and the Rolling Stones.
There have been country and even mariachi remixes of Lady Gaga's hit Born This Way, and now there's a Bollywood edition. Gaga collaborated with music composer Salim Suleiman on the Hindi film-themed version of her current release. Gaga's newest single, Judas, will be released on April 19th.
Jennifer Lopez has been named People Magazine's Most Beautiful Woman for 2011, joining an elite club including Halle Berry, Nicole Kidman, and Angelina Jolie. Other celebrities also featured in the issue are Dana Delaney, Zac Efron, Ryan Reynolds, and Reese Witherspoon.
LaToya Jackson talked about her affection for drag queens. Jackson, the first celebrity brought back for a second guest judge spot in the same season of RuPaul's Drag Race, said that LaToya drag queens kind of look like me, Diana Ross, and my sister mixed together, and added that RuPaul's show is just so much fun. Jackson also said that she's putting out a CD before the end of the year.
In Florida, Key West Pride 2011 will take place June 8th through 12th. The celebration includes a film festival, dance parties, drag shows, bike tours, pool parties, water excursions, a street fair, and a parade down Duval Street.
The National Basketball Association fined the Los Angeles Lakers' Kobe Bryant $100,000 on April 13th for offensive and inexcusable comments he made during the previous night's game against the San Antonio Spurs. TNT cameras caught Kobe apparently calling referee Bernie Adams a gay slur. Anti-gay organizations had demanded that Bryant apologize. Human Rights Campaign said that, while Bryant acknowledged the outburst earlier today and said in a statement that it did not reflect my feelings toward the gay and lesbian communities, he failed to apologize or to take full responsibility for the homophobic slur.
CNN's Anderson Cooper and Fox News anchor Shepard Smith, neither of whom has publicly said they're gay, are among those on Out Magazine's newest Power 50 list. Apple's current CEO Tim Cook tops the list, while Cooper and Smith are fourth and sixth, respectively. Other honorees include Ellen DeGeneres, Dan Savage, and Adam Lambert.
Out gay actor David Hyde Pierce, best known as Niles on the TV show Frasier, stars in the upcoming crime comedy The Perfect Host. Hyde Pierce plays Warwick Wilson, an uptight suburbanite who is set to be victimized by John Taylor, a criminal who needs a place to stay for the night.
In a shocker for soap fans, ABC has announced that it's canceling One Life to Live and All My Children. Children will end this September, while One Life to Live will air its last episode next January.
And Out singer Adam Lambert has defended a J. Crew layout that shows a young boy with pink-painted toenails. The layout, Saturday with Jenna, featured J. Crew creative director Jenna Lyons with her son Beckett. At one point, she says, "Lucky for me, I ended up with a boy whose favorite color is pink. Toenail painting is way more fun in neon." Conservative groups criticize the layout, saying that the company is targeting gender-confused young boys. However, Lambert recently tweeted, "Gender confusion? I don't think it's that deep. Children should have full freedom of expression. It's everyone else who's confused." And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Is it always right to pursue these feelings?
Hey, this is Ari Gold, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
And I know.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of April 18th, 2011, You are in Chicago's Culture Club.
About Face Theater presents Pony, running now through May 22nd at the Chopin Theater. Pony's the new guy in town, haunted by a crime, and his mysterious air attracts the attention of an obsessive waitress and a young trans man named Heath. Pony wades through a world of violence, shifting gender roles and obsessive love, and reveals more about himself than he ever intended. For tickets to Pony, visit aboutfacetheater.com.
Between two evils, I always pick the one I never tried before. Boho Theater presents Dirty Blonde by Claudia Scheer, a hilarious tribute to the original diva of stage and screen, Mae West. Dirty Blonde is now playing at Theater Wit. Visit bohotheater.com for more information.
Don't miss the 2002 Tony Award-winning Best Play, The Goat or Who is Sylvia, at Remy Bumpo Theater Company. Edward Albee's razor wit tears open taboos and tests the limits of forgiveness in this 90-minute ride. Get your tickets now for The Goat or Who is Sylvia at remybumpo.org.
The Jeff Award recommended A Twist of Water is now playing at the Mercury Theater, 3745 North Southport. The story of a gay Chicago teacher who has lost his partner in a car accident earned 4 stars from the Chicago Tribune and is a Windy City Times Critics' Choice. Rahm Emanuel said A Twist of Water was great. For tickets, visit mercurytheaterchicago.com.
Victory Gardens Theater presents Tree, a new play about two siblings divided by race who must face their roots and stitch together their family history from the fragile memories of an old woman. Tree is playing now through May 1st. Visit victorygardens.org to purchase your tickets today.
Dixie Longgate left her Alabama trailer park and took off Broadway by storm. Now join Dixie's good old-fashioned Tupperware party in Chicago, filled with outrageous tales, free giveaways, and the most fabulous Tupperware ever sold on a theater stage. Playing through May 15th at the Royal George Theater. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com. NBC Today Show claims, it's not your grandmother's Tupperware party. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
We're back with this very special Broadway New York City edition of the Windy City Queercast. I'm Amy Matheny. I'm here with
Heather Schmucker.
Heather Schmucker. And Heather, by day, you are a very important person in the world of...
I'm really not.
Well, actually, it's by night. by night.
I'm hardly very important.
But you are somebody who's integral into working on the development of new theater, mm-hmm. especially new musical theater, with your role in... up at Northwestern with the mm-hmm. American Music Theater Project. And those of you who go to our Idol events in the past few years know that Heather's been a judge at many of our Idol events, and she's around the worlds of, the worlds of theater and musical theater and all of the various artists that it takes to make a really great show. And, you know, many of these are the types of shows that eventually make their way to New York and to Broadway, to the Great White Way. And we're kind of sitting here in the middle of this. Heather's been up here. You've been here in the city for a bit recently, mm-hmm. Seeing a lot of shows. And so I just thought we would talk a little bit about what's going on in New York while we're here, and encouraging people of, you know, Saturday Night Live only happens Saturday night one time, you know, and less than 300 people get to experience
Absolutely.
That. But there is so much theater in this city, and so much to experience on a weekend trip, or a, you know, a couple of days, or a longer extended trip to New York. for, you know, great, I mean, the best the world has to offer, theater and in all its forms. And so, so let's just talk about some of the stuff that's going on. I think one of the shows that I've been hearing about from one of our very loyal listeners, Barry, who traveled the world about a year and a half ago, was the first person who sent me an email and said, oh my God, and sent me a picture with him with this big pink shoe in Australia and said, I've just seen this new musical version of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And it's taken a long time, but it's here now in the States and it's on Broadway. This is, of course, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert from the adapted from the film.
From the film, yeah.
And you saw this. So tell us a little bit about, I mean, you know the movie, so.
I do. It's just a gorgeous, beautiful story full of a lot of heart, and it's a really fun, fun, fun night in the theater.
Yeah.
I mean, I went with a big group of alumni from Northwestern, and they just simply had a blast. And it's what I really loved most about it is it's all music that's familiar to us. It's all
They use some of the music from the movie?
It's a lot of the original music from the movie. So there's no at least I don't want to say no because I'm not entirely sure, but to my memory of it, there isn't any original music original to the musical. So it's all songs that we've heard a million times
and from the Priscilla soundtrack.
And from the Priscilla soundtrack.
Of
the movie. And what I most love about that is that I had the experience watching it of really hearing some of those lyrics of songs that we know and we sing in the bars and we sing when we hear them on the radio.
Right.
But hearing them in the context of that story, and particularly that story live on stage, made me hear those lyrics in a way for the first time.
Which is kind of what happened,
which is
kind of the ABBA phenomenon, right, with Mamma Mia. I mean, in some weird ways, too, you hear some of the lyrics of those. I mean, some of them don't make sense, because we're on an island in Greece, and so you say something about, like, you know, Stockholm or something,
Absolutely.
You know. But you do hear them in a different context.
Yeah, and you hear them, and I think they have so much more meaning. And I just had that experience of, I sing that song all the time, and for the first time I'm hearing it in the context of this really sort of moving journey that this character is having
How are
with
the
his
costumes?
Son out of control.
Because the movie, there's kind of this wonderful fine line of their, you know, when the film came out, there's this fine line of, like, they're extreme and they're also slightly tacky, because you obviously can tell that they don't have that much money, but they invested all their money in this fabric, you know, and in these costumes. But I imagine on a Broadway show, that's where you amp up the theatricality of this.
Yeah, it's sort of one sort of costume more fabulous than the next that comes out, and they're just, it's really, there's just a lot of really clever design in it, and I really loved it. It was just so much fun.
And there are really great men in these roles, right? I mean, I think they looked for a long time for who would portray these.
Yeah.
Kind of, I mean, they're iconic characters.
They're iconic characters.
Now,
so it was exciting to see it in the, see it sort of fully realized on stage.
It's such an interesting thing that this story, you know, because Priscilla, Queen of the Desert obviously inspired the American, I guess, remake, the Tuong Fu. With your favorite, Stockard Channing. She would be your Helen Mirren.
If she hosted Saturday Night Live,
we would
totally fly here with me.
I would, indeed. I would, for sure. But, you know, and then now there's this musical. So it's really like the life that has come from, you know, this story that I think was, you know, a mainstream hit of a queer little film that has a lot of truth to it.
Yep.
So that's pretty exciting. I think that's probably one of the biggest, you know, draws for the gay community of what is going on here. But one of the biggest draws around the world is Spider-Man.
Yes.
Elton John, of course, did not write this musical. It's one of the few kind of big over-the-top musicals that he didn't write. This one was written by Bono and The Edge, right? But it has been plagued with the curse of being, like, the most expensive musical in the history of musical theater and problems and actors getting hurt. And, you know, my question is, are people going more now for the what is it, like the legacy the that kind of already is, of right? You know? So you did, you were one of the people who have seen the show.
Yeah. And I think people are, it's interesting, they're at such an interesting moment with the show right now.
Because it's changing like every freaking night,
well,
right?
Not, I mean, they're running it for, I think, another week after this week, and then they're going to shut down for a while and kind of go into a period of
because
reworking it.
Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, who is openly gay and playwright and comic book writer.
Right.
He also wrote for Big Love in its final two seasons, and is a friend of the Chicago theater scene and Chicago gay theater scene. He is now coming in to rewrite the book.
To work on the book, and so they're kind of in a, they're running it right now for another week as it was originally done, and then they're going to take this time off and ostensibly, I think, sometime in May, probably open again.
So did anybody crack their back while
it was, the show did stop, which I there was a moment in all of the conversation about it that I feel like, oh, I got my money's worth, because Spider-Man got to have that moment of
tangled up in his string or something.
It wasn't so dramatic. It was literally at the end of the play, there's a giant web, and it didn't release, or they couldn't get it down, and so they had to stop, and there were only 3 minutes left in the play, and so we sat for
I have
a while.
Never been in a Broadway show that stopped.
Yeah. I mean, it's
I
have to say, it is understandable to me, as someone who has worked behind the scenes in the theater, that something that complicated technically could be as it's understandable, because it's huge, and there's so much of the flying and the sort of, you know, breathtaking aerial stuff that they do is really complicated.
See, I was a child, and you were probably not born, but it was a big deal when Phantom of the Opera, when the chandelier
just
fell. Right,
when the chandelier came in.
And it doesn't even really fall.
It doesn't.
And I remember that was like the, oh, and then like Sunset Boulevard, it was amazing when
the staircase
like lifted.
Comes up, yeah.
You know, and now we have like kids and stuff like flying all over the ooh-ooh sphere. Yeah. And I think that interestingly enough, that the whole Cirque du Soleil world and the whole kind of acrobatic circus world has added this whole new heightened element that can a Broadway musical really just be a good standard Broadway musical? You know, it doesn't need all these bells and whistles. And a good, I think, probably more classic formed musical, also from a film that Priscilla Queen of the Desert was a film, but is the new Catch Me If You Can. The film, of course, starred Leonardo DiCaprio portraying this real character who, in the early 60s, got away with embezzlement and identity theft, and you know, was this mastermind young man, and he's portrayed by this hot rising star.
Fabulous
on Broadway,
star, Aaron Tveit, who was in Next to Normal originally,
which will be coming to Chicago,
which is
but
coming
not with
to
him.
Chicago, not with him,
but with the woman who won the Tony, who played
with Alice
his
Ripley.
Mother,
yes.
Alice Ripley.
Yes.
Fourth Broadway in Chicago, so that's a show to see.
It is a show to see.
I love
that
show.
I saw that show last year here.
Yeah, I did too. But he plays the DiCaprio.
He plays the DiCaprio and Norbert Leo Butz. I haven't seen the movie, so I actually don't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, but
I haven't seen the musical, but I've seen the...
Who played that character in the film, do you remember?
Is it Tom Hanks?
I don't know.
I think maybe.
Maybe Tom Hanks.
I'm sorry if I'm being...
That's all right.
not correct on that. Inaccurate on that. I can't remember, but I think I think it is, because it's a Spielberg film.
Yeah.
Right? So...
So it's sort of the story. It's a fantastic story of this, you know, young kid who has sort of found his way into ripping people off. And you see him sort of develop that skill and it's about the cop who is sort of chasing him throughout the story. And it has some fantastic, huge, amazing production numbers that just sort
I'm
of old school classical production numbers.
An amazing amount of stamina, because there's such a central character
it
to
is,
that, right?
Yeah,
like he's
absolutely.
Probably in every
single
scene.
Moment of the play. There's very few.
And
I don't even know if there's a moment he is off stage that I can remember.
Yeah. And then one of the shows that's getting ready to open in previews, of course, for all you Harry Potter fans who perhaps you miss seeing Daniel Radcliffe naked. Well, you won't see him naked, but you will see him singing and dancing in the Broadway revival of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, which is a score I really, really love. And I know you did not see it.
I didn't see it.
I think that it's just such a great musical. And Matthew Broderick, of course, did one revival of it. And then... you know, years ago, it was, who was the original? Robert Morse was in the original, but I can't think of who it was right now.
Yeah. This is where I start to feel really, really old, because I just feel like that Matthew Broderick revival was, like,
the real
3 minutes
ago.
Oh,
it was 3 minutes ago.
it starred
Megan Mullally.
Megan Mullally and Matthew Broderick. And the fantastic Lilias White was in that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other iconic people on Broadway right now, Kathleen Turner's in a new play called High that is about a young kid who is a drug addict. Was that kid gay? I can't remember if I read that he was a gay character or not. But anyhow, and she plays a nun, actually. I think probably hard for some of us to believe that she would be a nun, but, you know. But I hear she's very good in the play. I hear she's actually fantastic in it, as is the young man in this play called High. That's on Broadway right now. And another play that you saw that we tried to see.
We did. I tried to see it again, yeah.
Which we hadn't, we were, and I was unable to see it, but you have seen, is a Transplant from London, from the National Theater. I believe it's the National Theater. I think so. Called War Horse, and tell us the story of War Horse.
Oh, it's just one of the most amazing productions I've seen. It's at Lincoln Center right now at the Vivian Beaumont Theater. So War Horse is one of the most amazing productions I've seen in a really long time. It is at Lincoln Center at the Vivian Beaumont Theater, and it takes place in World War I. It's the story of a boy and his horse. And
Not Equus. And not naked Daniel Radcliffe.
Not that kind of boy and his horse. But it's a beautiful story about a boy who is separated from this horse that he has raised, and the horse ends up sort of drafted into military service. And you see the boy... the boy spends the play searching for the horse and follows him into the war, basically. But it's this stunning production with these amazing puppets. Huh. And I call them puppets, and it's not appropriate to call them puppets. I don't even know what the word is, but they become horses on stage. They are the most beautiful architectural, operated by live actors.
Mm-hmm.
And they become living, breathing, live horses that people can ride on. I mean, literally, people get up on them and ride on stage. It's really just a beautiful story and one of the most stunning sort of visual productions I've seen.
And this is based on a very famous, a novel of great acclaim. It is the National Theatre of Great Britain. And over 35 actors in the production. Mm-hmm. So it's a big show.
It's a big show.
A musical, but it's not. And
it does, it has music in it. There's a...
Yeah.
Really beautiful.
But I think once again, it's like, what is this new theatrical element that's being added onto a show? And, as we said earlier with, like, Spider-Man, you know, with the work that circus and puppetry and all of this other elements seem to have married well here in this production. And it's from this novel. Now it's been made into this play. And I believe if I, once again, my facts, you know, look, I'm not a fact. We're not the news.
I'm not fact checking. The Fox News fact checker is not hard at work here.
Yeah. I'm not fact checking all this. Yeah. But I am pretty sure that Steven Spielberg is making this into a movie.
I read that
in Entertainment Weekly, and that they have found this young boy who is playing this young boy. And, you know, how many different horses they had to, you know, have to portray this one horse.
Yeah.
So, you know, once again, when we were talking about Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, like, you know, a good story being, you know, kind of fully vetted through various forms.
This is really
interesting to see how this one has gone from novel to play to film, which is kind of an, you know, the reverse of what we're seeing so much now, right? It usually starts as a film, a book to maybe a film and then to a play.
And but this you look has at been... something even in Chicago like Trust that opened at Looking Glass.
Right.
and now is just opened as a film. So that's starting to,
right.
You know, it's starting to happen that way. I think something for Spider-Man and War, or for, with Warhorse, what's it was really interesting for us to see it and to see Spider-Man in the same weekend because I think there's, you know, so you look at Spider-Man that has all of this amazing technology and it's all this incredible computerized technology that makes these amazing things that you know, flying and crazy things happen on stage, and then something like Warhorse that is sort of these puppets that are all architecture and human beings, you know,
right.
There's nothing computerized,
right.
Or
it's really
mechanical.
Organic.
It's completely human operated, you know, these beautiful puppets that have been built, and yet it has a kind of amazing, incredible life on stage that is just really stunning.
Yeah.
So see Warhorse. It's great.
And a classic that is happening here, I mean, it's one of my favorite plays, Oscar Wilde's The Importance of Being Earnest, is running through into the summer, into July, of Brian Bedford starring as Lady Bracknell in The Importance of Being Earnest, and that's happening at the Roundabout Theater at the American mm-hmm. Airlines Theater, one of our sponsors. So that is a must-go-see show if you love Oscar Wilde, if you love the classics, and you know, gay author and gaying it up with, which is a common thing that's been done, you know, often over the past mm-hmm. number of decades, is to have a man play that overpowering mm-hmm. central mm-hmm. mother figure in that play. And obviously the hottest ticket right now in New York City, and I think one of the great reasons I'm enjoying that we're getting to do this podcast, not that I've seen everything and I will come back to see Warhorse based on Heather's recommendation and some other things that we're even talking about, is that we are gearing up for the Tony Awards, the Tony Award nominations, and the Tony season, which happens in June. You know, that's the high holidays for us gays. So but the show that everyone is talking about is, of course, the marriage of the wonderful creators of South Park and the wonderful creator of Avenue Q, which is Book of Mormon. And now neither of us have seen this,
yeah.
So we can't speak to it from, you know, that standpoint. But it is in previews, and it's essentially about...
Oh, it's opened.
Oh, it's open. Mm-hmm. That's true. Sorry.
Yeah.
It has opened. But it is about, you know, these two Mormon boys, young men, who go on their mission. And they go on a mission to Africa, I believe, to Uganda. And it's about, you know, and it's a musical in the same vein that if you've seen Avenue Q, irreverent and probably could be foul-mouthed, let's not forget.
Not could be.
Will be. And it let's not definitely. Forget that, you know, that the Trey Parker and Matt Stone also did Team America and South Park the movie, where they wrote, you know, What Would Brian Boitano Do? And Blame Canada and these songs that, you know, they are not new to writing musical episodes or musical mm-hmm. films, mm-hmm. but the first time they've ever been on Broadway. And it has gotten amazing reviews, amazing review in Entertainment Weekly.
And in the New York Times.
And in the New York Times. So I don't know, you know, it's interesting because from what I've read, you know, the thing with Avenue Q, once again, we talk about the other elements out, you know, the external added elements to a play. Avenue Q is not a play that easily, not that it would be getting done in high schools or in colleges maybe very easily or in regional theaters based on content, but because of the puppets, it's not a play that is going to get done a ton and a ton and a ton, right, on a maybe a non-professional level. But this one actually may, because I don't know that there's that element, of puppetry mm-hmm. That is so essential in Avenue Q. So it'll be interesting to see, because Avenue Q tried to do that whole thing where it left Broadway and was going to go just to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And then it started touring.
Yeah.
But this one, I am very fascinated to see what the long life of this
of this
show will be. But what is pretty certain is that it will have a long life here in New York
City. I mean, I think one of the it's clear that the create what I've heard of it is that it's clear the creators of South Park have a great appreciation for the musical theater form and have actually created something that's really, I mean, I hear people comparing it to, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein, and when I it's fantastic. I mean, a lot of people have made those comparisons because I think they have a great appreciation and knowledge of the form and are using a lot of the similar
I did see you know, the South Park guys on Charlie Rose and a few weeks ago, and they were just talking about the fact that, you know, one of them especially, like, he loves Broadway musicals.
Absolutely.
He loves musical theater, and he, as you said, you know, there was an homage element to being mentored around that type of song structure and where a song comes in a show and what it needs to accomplish, and it seems like it's been a long time for them to, you know, make it happen when they write so many episodes of South Park, you know, for them. I mean, it's a long process, as you know, to make
a
musical, you know, come to get, you know, to birth a musical.
Right.
But it seems really like it's been successful. It's a very, very, very big time right now in New York.
It's a huge time.
I mean, haven't had a season like this in a while.
The numbers are kind of staggering, and particularly the numbers of new musicals and new plays that are opening is just staggering right now. I don't think there's an empty theater on Broadway certainly right now. Although we did see them loading out Driving Miss Daisy this morning, so I don't know. Which just closed, so who knows? I don't know what's coming in there next. But, you know, I would also, I guess I would just say, as much as coming to New York and going to Broadway is such a fantastic experience, there's also so much other great theater in the city that happens.
Off-Broadway.
We saw something, you know, we saw a fantastic show, Amy and I, off-Broadway tonight at Playwrights Horizons called Kin. That's only running for another week, so
it will be closed.
It's come here fast if you want to see it, but there's a ton of amazing work going on, not just on Broadway, all over the city.
And I always think, you know, go see, you know, one of the big shows or maybe a couple of the big shows, and then go look in the off-Broadway or off-Broadway listings and see what's gotten some good reviews or what seems interesting to you, and go see that, because I think for those of us in Chicago, it kind of taps into a Chicago theater feel. I think sometimes to be in some of the smaller houses and there's just some little gems out there.
Absolutely.
Mean, the play we saw tonight was just
beautiful,
gorgeous. And you know, no trip to New York is kind of complete without me heading to the Village, to the East Village and the West Village, the Village in general, and also, we walked a little bit through Chelsea, but, you know, if you have not been here, this town is really rich with, obviously, gay history. And, I mean, look, you see gay people in Hell's Kitchen, you see gay people in Chelsea, you see gay people in the Village. You don't have to just be on Christopher Street or, you know, in front of the Stonewall Inn, the famous Stonewall Inn, to see gay people around. You know, it's a major city, so you can come here and feel very, very comfortable.
Everywhere.
But if you do come here, I definitely think, you know, venturing down to those neighborhoods is very, very cool. And I just asked Heather before the podcast, I said, you know, have you ever been to the Stonewall Inn? And it's like,
I have not.
It's like you kind of got to pop down to the Stonewall Inn on one of your trips and just take a picture of yourself out front. But I hope everybody's enjoyed, you know, what we've kind of had to share. There are, of course, many more shows going on. Shows that are, I mean, still running here, of course, Jersey Boys and the new La Cage aux Folles and Billy Elliot and Chicago. I mean, these are shows that are still running here. And there's also some interesting new plays that are popping up. On Broadway, The Motherfucker with a Hat, which is a new play starring Bobby Cannavale.
Bobby Cannavale from Will and Grace.
Who played Will's cop.
cop boyfriend.
Like Brooklyn or Bronx mm-hmm. kind of cop boyfriend. And he's such a great actor.
He's a phenomenal actor. He's a phenomenal actor. And tore that role up.
Yeah.
In Motherfucker with a Hat.
Yeah. And and then, you know, other great actors at this time come to town to kind of flex their muscles. Edie Falco's doing House of Blue Leaves. And as we already said, Kathleen Turner doing High. So come check it out. Visit a website and find out what all's going on in, you know, New York, and come take a trip to the other city. I like to call this the second city.
The second city.
It's really the city I like to come visit because I think we live in the best city in the U.S., which I really enjoy. And but Helen Mirren's titties were not on display in Chicago, so I had to come to New York.
All the way to New York.
But soon maybe they will be.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Who knows?
I just think that she'll end up in her red bikini at Edgewater Beach with me.
Maybe any day now.
Any day now. Everybody, I hope you're enjoying the warm weather. Hopefully it will stay, and I look forward to having another podcast with you soon. We're going to be talking about GLBTQ teens in this new survival guide for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender and questioning youth. It is a fantastic book, and I'm so grateful that I got to spend some time with the woman who is the writer and editor of the second edition of this book, and that will be coming up. And you know, it's crazy, but we're fast training into Pride Month and into the summer. So lots more great shows to bring you, and I just appreciate you all listening to this one, and Heather joining me.
Yay!
You're a virgin no more.
I'm a virgin no more.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.